Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten, mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnet? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto, das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, a challenge for Samsung Electronics as the tech giant faces an indefinite strike by workers in South Korea. The Indian Prime Minister's first stop on a visit to the EU is in Austria. So what are the connections between Delhi and Vienna? Also, French business has to deal with weeks of uncertainty as politicians squabble over who's to form the new government in Paris, and the allure of celebrity endorsement when it comes to drinks. That's all coming up. But first, Samsung is one of the world's largest tech companies, and its subsidiary, Samsung Electronics, is the world's largest maker of memory chips, smartphones and televisions. So an indefinite strike called by a union representing around a quarter of Samsung Electronics workers in South Korea has caused some alarm. Yuna Koo of BBC Korean in Seoul told me what it was all about.
Samsung Electronics and the National Samsung Electronics Union, or NSEU, have reportedly been in talks since early this year, but they couldn't agree on the specific of pay and conditions. The union has been demanding a wage increase, additional paid leave, and a new standard for calculating their incentives. This incentive part seems rather significant because Samsung Electronics went through tough times last year with its chip division recording significant deficits, which led to 0% incentives for workers under this division, whereas executives still received other types of incentives. For Samsung Electronics employees, these kinds of incentives make up a large percent of their overall pay. So this issue appears to have been an important trigger for the strike.
Now, it's interesting that the union has now said this strike will be indefinite. Presumably, that's because they're not getting any response from Samsung.
Yes, actually, we weren't expecting this announcement to be made so quickly because the union initially planned a 3-day strike ending Wednesday. And they said that they'd consider further action, including an indefinite strike starting next week. So that's also what I've heard from the phone call conversation with the leader of the union. As you mentioned, the union also said in a statement that the company is refusing to talk and attempting to interrupt the strike.
So what is Samsung saying about all this?
Actually, Samsung is not saying much about this strike. The company has told BBC that it will ensure no disruption occur in the production lines and remain committed to engaging in good faith negotiation with the union, which is not much different from what we hear from local media reports now.
And this comes at a period, I mean, there's been a lot of trouble over the recent years with Samsung in various ways. I think people thinking that after scandals at the top of the company, they couldn't necessarily stop unions operating anymore. So is this likely to cause problems in other divisions of Samsung, do you think?
For sure, this is a historical event for Samsung because, as you mentioned, Samsung has long standing reputation for being resistant to any kind of unionization. This doesn't mean that actually Samsung is preventing workers from organizing unions, because there have been several unions in the past, but it is true that there haven't been any significant union works in the past decades of time. So if this strike succeeds, other unions under this big Samsung conglomerate might go on other strikes to ensure that their demands are met.
Yuna Koo there, a BBC Korean in Seoul. And as she said, Samsung has told the BBC there's no disruption to production and also said it's going to continue talks with the union. Well, the vice president of the National Samsung Electronics Union, Hyunguk Lee, sent us this voice note.
전국 삼성전자 노동조합은 National Samsung Electronics Union has confirmed that Samsung is not willing to engage in conversation even after the first strike, so we are announcing the second indefinite strike from the 10th of July. The July 8th meeting has motivated the union members who didn't initially participate in the strike. The union members will no longer hesitate. We confirmed the definite disruption in production line, and the company will regret its decision. The company isn't engaging in conversation, but are disrupting the strike. We will react with everything, including legal measures. We will not stop until a measure is introduced to offset any loss from the strike.
NSEU's Hyun-guk Lee there. So I asked Professor Dae-jung Kim from the Graduate School of Business at Sejong University in Seoul, how much damage could all this potentially do to Samsung's production line? We voiced over his words due to a poor line.
All production workers participate in this strike.
25% of all production workers are participating in the strike. If Samsung fails to reach an agreement, it will impose a major risk to Samsung Electronics semiconductor production. Currently, Samsung semiconductors have a 50% market share, and memory semiconductors currently have a 10% market share. Samsung Electronics must also supply high-bandwidth memory, or HBM semiconductors. I think Samsung is now preparing to deliver HBM semiconductors to NVIDIA. I think it will be a big risk for Samsung.
So then do you think Samsung will be forced to give in to the union demands if its production is going to be affected that badly?
Samsung Electronics has now increased the salary by 5%. The union is asking for an additional 3% increase on that 5%. Samsung Electronics is expected to make the adjustment by giving up on the issue in order to conclude a negotiation. Samsung headquarters must actively negotiate and reach an agreement on the requirement. In Korea, prices have risen by about 3% this year. It is true that labor union is also being excessively greedy. I think it is best to raise about 3% over the inflation level.
Over the price level.
Do you think these kind of disputes and the push for greater pay and industrial action, is it going to spread to other big companies in South Korea? For example, LG. Do you think the same thing could happen there?
I think there are concerns of a strike at other companies in Korea as well. Hyundai Motors go on strike every year, and Kia also goes on strike every year too. However, as LG is a home appliance company, there have been almost no strikes between labor and management so far. The reason foreigners in Korea are reluctant to invest is because of the strong labor unions. The government and the company must manage the union well and always persuade them to move forward together. It is necessary to achieve a win-win situation. All workers around the world need the companies and the unions to grow and develop together.
Professor Dae-jung Kim there. Well, let's pick some of this up with Christopher Rosbach, who's Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at J. Stern & Co. here in London. Now, Christopher, thanks for being with us on the program. I mean, clearly, a big company like Samsung is going to be watched on things like this as far as investors are concerned. How's the share price doing?
Well, Samsung's share price has been appreciating in sympathy with the increase in interest in the chips and in AI, but it faces a tremendous challenge. Its memory chips are not yet approved for being used by NVIDIA training for large language models. So they have a lot of challenges in their model, in their business model, and investors are waiting to see how they will address that. I think the sooner they can address these labor issues, with labor being a small part of their overall cost base, the better. Yeah. And I think the share price will react.
We shall see. And stay with us, Christopher, you will. We're going to talk a bit more about what's been going on the markets a little bit later in the program. But now let's turn our thoughts to Austria, because India's Prime Minister is there at the moment. Narendra Modi arrived from Moscow to Vienna on the latest leg of his European tour and is leading a large business delegation. It's the first visit by an Indian leader to Vienna for decades. And at first glance, it's not entirely obvious why Austria, the world's 33rd largest economy, should be prominently hosting the leader of the fifth largest. Let's speak to Hans-Jörg Hurtnagel, who's commercial counsellor at the Austrian Trade Commission, joining us, in fact, on the line from New Delhi. Hans-Jörg, thanks for being with us. I mean, what are the business connections between Austria and India?
Well, hello, good evening, good day. It's a pleasure to be in your program. Well, first of all, I can proudly state that the Indo-Austrian business relationships go back in the days of Indian independence. In that days, the Indian steel industry was built up with the famous Austrian steelmaking process. In the continuous year, we had a lot of economic relations. We are Austria's majorly technology provider. So in the last 10 years, we intensified our business relations. Our exports doubled. Our number of companies got doubled. We have at the moment 150 companies, Austrian companies established in India. And of course, such a high-level visit is an excellent opportunity to strengthen these relationships and discuss new opportunities for both sides.
Well, clearly that's part of the idea there. But I suppose you talk about steel, that going in one direction towards India. What is it that Austria gets from India?
Well, we get from India, I must say, in the last 10 years, and this shows the new strength of India, the Indian export structure got very well structured and very well balanced. So 10 years ago, it was basically textile garments. In the meantime, we import motorcycles, machinery, chemicals, pharmaceuticals. And what is interestingly, last year, we imported smartphones worth 80 million euros, and the year before was zero. So this shows clearly the potential of the new India.
So what is the future of this relationship? You've talked about what has happened. Are there big projects in view? Because obviously with Prime Minister Modi there, you imagine these are the things being talked about.
Yes. Well, I must say, Arthur, I would like to mention we are celebrating 75 years of diplomatic relationship with India. This was also a major reason for the high-level visit. And, you know, in future, at the moment, Austria is very strong in infrastructure. We are very strong in the railway sector, railway infrastructure. We are strong in smart and green tech. And especially India now is interested in what is sustainability. So circular economy and renewable energy. And in that area, Austria, I can proudly say, we're one of the world market leaders. For example, we are very strong in alternative fuel for the cement industry. We reach 100%. No other country reaches that. We are very strong. This is a completely new area and also shows the new potential in India. This is the cable car or roadway sector. And the Indian Transport Minister Gadkari, he was last year in Innsbruck, and he announced 260 cable car projects, especially for temple tourism, you know, to reach remote temples. And there's Austria is the world market leader in that.
Because both so countries, you have lots of mountains, you'll need cable cars.
Yes, of course. Yes,
and Hans-Jörg, let me ask you then, finally, if I may. This is a situation where you are a member of the EU, of course, and India has famously, notoriously, been quite protective of its economy. There's been a number of restrictions on what can be imported into India. Is this a moment, do you think, where perhaps Austria can have a word with Prime Minister Modi and get him to perhaps relax some of those for the whole of the EU?
Well, I must say first of all, it's a bilateral meeting. I must say from our side, we don't face so many issues because we're majorly a technology provider. But we would like to explore new possibilities, especially in the area of startups, digitalization. We had within the last year, we had four startups delegations from India to Austria. We want to promote Austria, especially Vienna, as a hub for the German-speaking market. You know, all these companies, they are already successful in the English-speaking market, but not yet in the German-speaking market. So there, Vienna is an excellent hub for the German-speaking countries. Another area is the famous, you know, Indian talent pool. More and more, even Austrian small companies, medium companies from Austria reach us out, and they want to set up small offices. They call it here global capacity centers, and like outsourcing services for the head office in Austria. This is like drawings, engineering, and so on, and software design, of course.
A lot of plans for the future. Hans-Jörg, thanks so much for being with us. Hans-Jörg Hortnagel there, joining us on the line from New Delhi. You're with World Business Report from the BBC.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnet? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
We're in the El Gharbia region in Egypt, to uncover the hidden side of a trade that feeds one of the richest, most exclusive industries in the world.
The documentary from the BBC World Service brings you award-winning journalism, unheard voices, amazing culture, and global issues.
We try to look at the bigger picture.
Search for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
World Service. Now, France has been getting used to governmental chaos since Sunday's election. What the French electorate seemed to be saying was that they didn't want a majority of far-right MPs, but they didn't seem to want any other group to get an overall majority either. It seems there are going to be many weeks before some kind of coalition can be put together. And that will be a time of uncertainty for French business. And famously, uncertainty is what business really doesn't like. Well, let's speak to Emmanuel Oriot, who is on the Council of Economic Analysis and a professor at the Toulouse School of Economics and joins us now. Emmanuel, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I mean, I made the point there, the difficulty of trying to deal with uncertainty. But I mean, I suppose that is the problem for French business. You don't know what kind of financial system is going to be put in. It could be of the left, which would have big implications, but maybe not.
No, exactly. I do not have a crystal ball, and so I have no idea of exactly what will happen and unfold in the week to come. But what will happen in the short run is not much, because we have the Olympic game, and so we need stability. And we see that the Front Populaire, the left wing, is discussing to try to find a name to propose to Macron. It's not easy, because everybody wants to be MP. So we have one name from Socialist Party and one name from the extreme left. Both names will be problematic for businesses, because they want to apply the program of Front Populaire, and it's a very dangerous program for public finance. So that would be an issue. And then we have something else that is trying to emerge, which is a coalition between the presidential party and the right party, which is not with the extreme right, so with the Republican. And if they manage to build some kind of coalition, they can propose a prime minister, because they will have more MPs than the left party. So that's the left coalition.
It sounds very complicated and extremely difficult to resolve. but meantime, I mean, businesses still have to make decisions. What can they do?
Well, my understanding of what will happen, honestly, will be not much. So it's more paralysis than really revolution. That's what I think, because Macron, we shouldn't forget that, is still the president. And in France, the president in the Fifth Republic has a lot of power. We still have also the Senate. We have also other institutions that are stable. So paralysis is more what we can fear than really anything dramatic. But we need to, of course, observe what will unfold.
Indeed. And that is the challenge for it all. I suppose at this point also, though, for French business, I mean, you've had the experience of, I suppose, a centre government, one would call it, perhaps centre-right, and President Macron. Is there a sense that any form of cohabitation and working together with the new government, he will be able to continue, essentially, what he's been doing before?
No, I don't think he will be able to do, because as I mentioned, I mean, if we have a left-wing prime minister, it will be a true cohabitation. And this prime minister will be in trouble to pass law, because he will have no majority at the parliament. So there will be a lot of discussion and trouble. So maybe he will try to pass it by decree, but then Macron can say no, and you can have a vote at the parliament that is against the proposal, and then paralysis. So my understanding would be that Macron for sure will not be able to push reform anymore.
Okay. And I guess a budget's got to be around the corner. That's what people are going to be looking at.
Yes, exactly. So, well, in case of paralysis, the constitution has that in store for us. So what will happen that we will have the same budget as last year. So that's a good news, because no more spending than last year.
But that may not be adhered to, I suppose, in the few months ahead. I mean, this, looking further ahead, there's no certainty about that either.
No. I mean, I repeat, I think one the most likely thing will be a technical government or paralysis, but nothing more than that.
An interesting moment for France, I think. Thank you very much, Emmanuel. Emmanuel Oriot there of Toulouse School of Economics. Thanks for being with us. Now, let's pick up on that, in fact, and the difficulties that come for it. Let's go back to Christopher Rosbach, who's still with us. So, Christopher, I mean, we heard there about some of the frustration, but presumably that's going to affect investment as well. What's happening on the share market?
Well, I think that French companies, like many, are used to operating in difficult political environments, and gridlock is not always the worst for business. I think France has some very globally competitive companies, and they have a lot of opportunity in particular coming up with the Olympics coming up and the inbound tourism that's going to be expected. So I think that the French companies operate in a global context. There is pressure on competitiveness. There's pressure on labor costs. But I think an outcome that is a moderate one and that is going to be perhaps facilitated by the gridlock, but also by the global pressures, is not something to be worried about.
OK, well, let's turn our views to another country, very much in the focus, of course, in the run-up to the election, a different election, this one in the US, and concern about really how the economy is going to be doing at that point. Now, we've had a very interesting time, Christopher, because there were certainly remarks from Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve chief, suggesting interest rate cuts maybe later this year. Clearly, Wall Street liked that very much. We've now had Powell saying that the mandate Congress has given the Fed to pursue stable inflation and maximum job growth hasn't impaired the bank's work. What is everyone reading into this now?
Well, I think the good news is that the market is setting interest rates, and the Fed has gone from having no leeway in terms of the measures that they can take to having all of them. The underlying economy is still solid, but the labor market is slowing and inflation is moderating. That's some of the data that we've seen. So it's approaching the 2% target. And so I think it's really good news. And what Powell was saying on Tuesday in his testimony to Congress was that there's scope for cutting rates to support the economy, in particular to support people who are being burdened by the higher rates, and that they are looking forward to that. He was not pushing back on the idea it could happen in September, but it could happen later if the numbers continue to be robust.
Okay, let's look at Tesla, which is obviously the big EV company, doing pretty well, but battling target price increases at the moment, and their market share in the US fell is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, their market share has fallen to 49.7%. That's just below 50%. So it's the first time really in the history of the company since they started selling EVs in 2012. It's a milestone in a way, but it has to do with their lagging competitiveness, with the fact that there's now over 100 models of electric cars. So they're losing share to GM, to Hyundai, to Kia, to Ford, so both U.S. and foreign producers, and the Chinese haven't even started to sell their electric cars at scale in the States. So it's a real question. Their models are old. The Model Y is from 2020. And so I think it's a real challenge for them, yep, how they're going to compete and maintain their competitiveness.
Interesting times. Thanks, Christopher. Christopher Rosbach, their Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at J. Stern & Co. Now, do you choose a drink because it's linked to a celebrity? Well, celebrity-backed or celebrity-owned drinks are everywhere at the moment, whether it's George Clooney's Casamigos Tequila or KSI and Logan Paul's Prime Energy drinks. You can't go far without spotting them. The global alcohol industry is worth just over $1.5 trillion, so it's no surprise celebrities are topping up on endorsements. Izzy Greenfield's been finding out more.
Right off the bat, Casamigos from George Clooney, Teremana Tequila from Dwayne The Rock Johnson, A1-8, that's Kendall Jenner. You've got Heaven's Door, Bob Dylan's whiskey.
These labels all have one thing in common. They're drinks brands all owned or endorsed by celebrities.
Dylan, do you know if we have any more 100 mils of gin in stock?
Off the top of my head, no.
This is Andrew Pentland. He works at Gator Beverage Store in Gainesville, Florida, a shop that's very popular among college students in the area.
I've been working here at Gator Beverage for 10 years now. I'm the buyer here, so I'm responsible for making all the decisions as to what we stock and what products we have and don't have.
He also tells me what to do a lot.
Andrew spoke to me alongside his co-worker, Dylan. As well as doing their day jobs, the pair run a TikTok account guiding viewers through the best alcohol or liquor that the store stocks. And a lot of it is celebrity endorsed.
You've got Heaven's Door, Bob Dylan's whiskey. You've got Two-Turnt Tea from Two-Turnt Tony, who is one of the most prolific social media creators out there today.
It's pretty amazing. And we turn them down all the time just because, you know, we have a specific clientele that maybe not all celebrities appeal to.
And do you mean you turn them down in terms of stocking them in the store?
Yes. But I'm thinking of Brad Pitt, Provence Rosé, Mirabelle. There's a couple other ones that are higher price point, maybe not in the student market as popular, or just things that are, you know, maybe marketed towards different parts of the country. A lot of country music stars have whiskeys that might sell elsewhere, but not so much here.
So you guys are turning down Brad Pitt?
We have turned down Brad Pitt.
That's a good way to put it. You're right. I haven't thought about that.
Whether celebrities are just endorsing a brand or they own it entirely, there's money to be made. The global market size for alcoholic beverages is predicted to surpass $2.2 trillion by 2025. And Andrew might be crossing Brad off his stock list, but the actor needn't worry. His wine was once voted the most desirable Provence Rosé in the world. He's not the only one reaping the rewards. Actor Ryan Reynolds' investment in Aviation Gin saw him cash out after only 3 years with a huge $610 million. And after model Kendall Jenner founded her own tequila brand 818 in 2021, 2022 sales were around $25 million. While Andrew and Dylan have seen a surge in popularity and celebrity-based drinks from their customer base, not everyone rates the drinks so highly.
I think there are two kinds of people. There are the people that just are obsessed with celebrities and want to buy everything that they're putting out there. And then there's the people that don't really care, like myself, you know, that doesn't impress me one bit.
This is Bad Birdie, described as the tattooed bartender taking over Los Angeles.
Today, we're making a funky banana daiquiri with some tarragon. Let's start this off with 3/4 of an ounce of fresh lime.
I am a global cocktail creative. I'm a bartender. I'm a business owner for multiple businesses. A social media influencer, which sounds funny for me to say, but it is the case. And I do restaurant consulting, restaurant and bar consulting as well. Amongst bartenders, we understand that, you know, sometimes celebrities aren't putting out the best product. And the brands that partner up with celebrities, all of their funding, all of their money is going straight to the celebrities. So there isn't really room for outside projects. And I've experienced that myself with the few celebrity brands that I've worked with. You know, they're paying obviously for this giant name to push their product. A lot of the times people in the industry know that these celebrity products aren't really the best quality. And that's because the celebrity doesn't understand as much as some we do what kind of ingredients should be in that product, what belongs in there, what doesn't. There's a fine line of, is this celebrity product a good quality brand? Yes, they have the backing, the labeling is beautiful, but for us, it's all about selling that to the customer and providing that guest experience. And personally, I want to make sure that my guests are drinking quality products, not mediocre.
Ah, that's always the main thing, isn't it? Izzy Greenfield has been putting that report together. And let me tell you, the World Business Report doesn't endorse any drink. But if you are having a nice drink, I hope you enjoy it. That's it from World Business Report.
We're in the El Garbia region in Egypt to uncover the hidden side of a trade that feeds one of the richest, most exclusive industries in the world.
The documentary from the BBC World Service brings you award-winning journalism, unheard voices, amazing culture, and global issues.
We try to look at the bigger picture.
Search for The Documentary wherever you get your BBC podcasts.